Palestine.
All of the governments of the world except Iran and some other governments like Syria and Iraq, all of the other governments are like they're acting as puppet of the US, and that's very painful. And obviously the nation, the people, the Muslim Ummah is standing behind Palestine.
This is the time for the Muslim world to voice its solidarity with Palestinian brothers. We, the Pakistanis, express our support for the Palestinians and call for an immediate end to Israeli violence and oppression.
The Pakistani government has expressed its deep concerns over escalating tensions in the West Asia and expressed its support for Palestinians, calling on Israel to immediately halt its oppression.
Supporters of the Palestinian cause often express a deep commitment to continue their unwavering and unconditional support for the Palestinian liberation movement. They emphasize that the struggle for self-determination and justice for the Palestinian people is central to their advocacy. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Heads of governments were focusing on bringing more countries into the EU during a summit in Spain on Friday. However, millions of citizens across the current 27 member states are being neglected, a debate in the European Parliament has heard.
There are now 900,000 homeless people on any given night in Europe. And it's estimated that up to 125 million people in Europe live in energy poverty.
Apparently, social welfare systems in the EU are broken.
People across Europe are struggling to pay their rents, their mortgages, even the energy to heat their houses. Those losing their jobs are at a serious risk of becoming immediately homeless.
Sanctions against Russia are hurting the EU's economy. This as huge sums are spent on the war in Ukraine. Unlike EU decision makers, it seems a growing number of citizens want peace talks.
The solution is there. The solution is not to rearm Europe.
If France or Belgium had the war and Ukraine had this huge money, are we thinking that they're gonna give us this money? I don't believe so.
Meanwhile, the cash keeps flowing out of the EU and into Ukraine. Since things escalated in February last year, the EU has spent 83 billion euro on arming Ukraine, propping up the government in Kiev, and housing Ukrainian refugees. Some legislators claim it's a war the EU simply cannot afford or win. The European Central Bank has now increased interest rates 10 times in a row. The strategy, aimed at reducing inflation, is being questioned.
Inflation is the enemy of the poor and those on low incomes. But equally, high interest rates causes recessions, and recessions bring about unemployment.
Analysts point out that those driving the EU's economic and foreign policies are well able to afford the consequences, unlike the average person. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
In Paris, protesters gathered to express their support for Palestine's unprecedented and successful surprise military operation against Israel. By land, air, and sea, and with missiles, drones, and even manned hang gliders, the Palestinian resistance sent illegal settlers fleeing, captured Israeli soldiers, and apprehended Israeli military equipment, provoking awe in longtime pro-Palestinian activists.
We're all witnessing incredible actions by the Palestinian armed resistance, who, as far as we know, managed to come out of this huge concentration camp that Gaza is and inflict severe losses to the Israeli soldiers and settlers. We're looking at the news every minute.
The reasons for the offensive seem to be too many to count. This year has already seen a record annual number of West Bank children murdered. Israel wages 10 police raids every day, and Tel Aviv recently approved thousands of more illegal settlements, which one Palestinian official said was a declaration of open war against the Palestinian people. Last year, Israeli murders of West Bank Palestinians reached their highest level since 2005, while Israel's blockade of Gaza since 2007 is routinely labeled a crime against humanity. Israel's horrific crimes against Palestinians go back many, many decades, but so does the collaboration in these crimes by Western governments, who often claim to defend human rights.
Today, we are, of course, going to congratulate the Palestinian resistance and to expose the complicity of our government, to start with the French government, who is never stop collaborating with Israel occupation and colonization, because nobody says it, but it's not two armies, one against the other. It's people that are occupied and people that are occupying.
More protests in support of Palestinians are expected, but in 2014, France infamously became the first country in the world to ban pro-Palestinian demonstrations. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Under a sea of black flags, thousands of Palestinians from the blockaded coastal territory gathered in Gaza City in a rally organized by the Islamic Jihad movement. Men and women from all walks of life came out to take part in the Islamic Jihad's 36th anniversary celebration. The event was a massive display that showed the broad support for the Palestinian resistance movement by people in Gaza. The Islamic Jihad movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by Iran's revolution and the teachings of founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
The Zionist enemy must understand that killing our military commanders will not weaken the Islamic Jihad. Our movement is getting stronger and continues to develop its military capabilities to fight the Zionist enemy and liberate our land.
Addressing the masses via satellite transmission, the Islamic Jihad Secretary General Ziad Nakhala called on all Palestinian factions to adhere to resistance, as it is the only way to liberate Palestine. A large poster of the late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Haj Qasem Soleimani, was on display during the rally. The Islamic Jihad movement has described its relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran as deep-seated and strategic.
Iran unhum. Barakallah fikum.
May Allah's blessings rain upon the Islamic Republic of Iran, whom continues to support the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation. We call on all Arabs and Muslims to condemn normalization with the Zionist enemy and support the Palestinian people.
The Islamic Jihad has a powerful military wing called the Quds Brigades. It fought fierce battles against the Israeli regime since 2007 and has been enhancing its military capabilities.
Over the years, Palestinian resistance factions managed to enhance their military might and reduce their weapons locally. Few days ago, the Islamic Jihad held an impressive military drill, which made us all proud and made the Israeli enemy very uncomfortable.
Islamic Jihad supporters said they want the Israeli regime to know that the Islamic resistance movement is a force to be reckoned with.
As the Islamic Jihad marks the 36th anniversary of its establishment, the movement says it will continue armed resistance against the Israeli regime for the sake of liberating Al-Quds. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Over the past year and a half, the DPRK has launched more missiles than ever before. The U.S. has tried to deter that testing with initiating and expanding more sanctions against Pyongyang. On Wednesday, a key expert on the peninsula's issues told U.S. senators that Washington should now threaten the DPRK with preemptive strikes.
One of the ideas there, and it's a risky one, is declaratory policy, to say that we reserve the right to actually take down a missile if it's headed over Japan or if it's headed towards Hawaii, or the west coast of the United States. And that could be a mid-course intercept, or it could be on the launch pad.
As the U.S. and South Korea have boosted military cooperation and weapons deployment, the DPRK has been developing its advanced capabilities, including testing ballistic, cruise, hypersonic, and submarine-launched missiles. Activists say the threat of preemptive attack will not deter Pyongyang.
The U.S. threat of a preemptive strike against North Korea does not dissuade North Korea from developing nuclear weapons, but rather, paradoxically, this has been a factor that further encourages North Korea's nuclear development.
Activists suggest that suspending sanctions and negotiating with North Korea is the only way to reduce tensions on the Korean Peninsula. While the U.S. seems intent on restraining the DPRK's missile development by any means, it pursues a different policy towards South Korea. In May of 2021, the U.S. agreed to lift all missile restrictions on South Korea, opening the way for Seoul to potentially produce its own long-range ICBMs. Frank Smith, Seoul.
On my orders, the United States military has begun strikes.
Back on October 7, 2001, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan under the pretext of fighting terrorism and dismantling the Taliban government. The U.S. rained down bombs on Afghan cities and conducted numerous airstrikes, claiming to target terrorist hideouts and Taliban strongholds. But the war brought destruction, death, and displacement to millions of Afghans who suffered from violence, corruption, and instability that followed.
I was in Kabul when the U.S.-led coalition first started its airstrikes and bombardments on our territory. I do remember those painful and tragic days imposed on our poor people. The blind airstrikes were killing and injuring our innocent civilians. Their invasion of our country had no positive achievements, but it did bring violence, conspiracies, divisions, and corruption to our nation.
Some experts also said that the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan was a grave mistake in the first place. They believe the U.S. made a lot of blunders during its invasion of the country that led to its defeat and escape from the region.
Confronting a problem at the international level militarily is a wrong political and legal move. In many cases, the use of force and aggressive measures have not led to a positive result. The U.S. invasion of Afghanistan was one of the same mistakes they made at that time. They had a lot of goals and were making claims, but none of them came true. That's because the U.S. was wrong in its estimation of Afghanistan and its policies toward the country.
After a two-decade occupation of the country, the U.S. Army hastily left Afghanistan in 2021, and the Taliban came to power for a second time. As a result, the country is once again reeling from a humanitarian and economic crisis, while the U.S. and its allies have imposed harsh sanctions on the country. The U.S. invasion of Afghanistan has left the country in a state of devastation and despair. Afghan people hold the U.S. and its Western allies responsible for their plight. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
The surprise Palestinian attack on the Israeli regime, the Al-Aqsa Storm, has changed equations and shattered Israel's myth of invincibility. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, launched by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas in the early hours of Saturday, 7th of October 2023, has sent shockwaves across the occupied territories, forcing Zionist settlers to run for their lives. According to Palestinian observers, the surprise military operation has changed the regional equation in favor of the resistance axis and shattered the myth of Israel's invincibility. The Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement launched aerial, sea and ground attacks on the occupied Palestinian territories, including at least 5,000 rockets in the initial phase of the operation. The unprecedented Palestinian operation came in retaliation to the Israeli desecration of the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque, as well as a series of assaults against women in the Haram al-Sharif compound, the compound of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Late on Saturday, less than 24 hours after the operation was launched, Israeli media confirmed that several Israeli soldiers and settlers were held by Palestinian resistance fighters in the besieged Gaza Strip, including senior members of the Israeli army and Israeli generals. Palestinian fighters and youth liberated several Israeli illegal settlements and seized jeeps, tanks and jet fighters, whilst Israeli settlers were seen running away or hiding in shelters or even in trash containers. Dr. Mohammad Halassa, an expert on Israeli affairs in a conversation with Press TV, said, "The Al-Aqsa Storm operation took the Israelis by surprise and delivered a real slap in their face. Up until this moment, analysts believe that the Israelis are still under immense shock and cannot contain the situation." Dr. Mohammad Halassa, who has been closely monitoring the developments, said, "This time the Palestinians determined when and how the battle would unfold and take shape, while the Israelis entered an unprecedented state of chaos and panic. If the Israeli regime survives this battle, it will suffer a lot to recover from it and its psychological impact. These operations will for sure have repercussions on the Israeli internal situation and on the Israeli settler community as well. The internal Israeli arena is not the only variable to be affected by the battle." Dr. Halassa said, "The unraveling events will most probably change the equation of balance of power in the Middle East region." Touching on the status quo of the Israeli regime, Dr. Mohammad Halassa said, "The regime fears the expansion of confrontations and attacks on other areas of the occupied Palestinian lands and is living in real nightmare." He also pointed to Israeli fears of the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement on its northern borders, especially after the Lebanese resistance hailed the Al-Aqsa Storm operation. Dr. Halassa said, "If Israel decides to escalate, we might witness an intervention from the Lebanese resistance or other resistance factions that support the Palestinian resistance, a scenario that Israel has been discussing for years." The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah on Saturday described the Al-Aqsa Storm as a decisive response to the occupation's persistent crimes and violations of Palestinian rights and said it is closely...
This is Arabi English Radio from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we are interrupting our normal programming to bring you live coverage of the events in Gaza. We go over to Press TV headquarters for live rolling coverage of events in the Gaza Strip. At the moment, there's also live coverage of... various events in Gaza. We go over to Press TV headquarters for our live coverage.
Tehran's Imam Khomeini Airport, you can see a large crowd that has gathered to welcome him. Now, it is important to know that Sheikh Zakzaki is widely followed and revered by Muslims in Africa in general and also Nigerian Muslims in particular. And, of course, his political views are quite popular. You probably see the Palestinian flag that is being held by the group of people who are here to welcome him, which clearly shows his stance as an iconic figure in Africa, supporting Palestinians and their cause, particularly at this point in time in history, which is very critical for important figures to make their stances clear. And, of course, so let's not forget, Badia, that Nigerian, this Nigerian cleric and his wife, they have been facing persecution from Nigerian authorities for years with suffering life-threatening ailments. They have been tortured. Their children have been killed. They suffered a lot while they were held in custody by Nigerian authorities. And in 2019... he was injured, and his wife was arrested along with him during an attack by the Nigerian army, which resulted in the death of three of his sons and hundreds of his followers. And we do know that at least 350 people were killed back then. And, of course, this event is known as the Zaria Massacre. We have been covering this on Press TV, and our viewers are quite familiar with that. Anyhow, Zakzaki and his wife were finally acquitted from all charges laid against them in 2021. And now, well, they are here in Tehran. We don't know exactly what the schedule is like, but he will probably be meeting with high-ranking religious officials.
Okay, Gisa, we're going to now focus on the main story of the day. And that's what's taking place in the Gaza Strip. Can you tell us a little bit about the pro-Palestinian rallies that have been taking place in solidarity with Palestinians in Tehran?
Well, actually, ever since the Al-Aqsa flood surprise attack was launched, we've seen Iranians from all walks of life offering their support for Palestinians and their cause and their fight for freedom. Iranian officials, one after another, over the past 5 days, have been clearly making their stances known to the world that they support Palestinians in their fight for freedom, free their land from the hands of the occupiers and violent regime. There was a rally that was held on in Palestine Square 3 nights ago, with people celebrating, chanting slogans, and, of course, playing music in support of Palestinians. And interestingly enough, you see the crowd today that have gathered at Imam Khomeini Airport in Tehran to welcome Sheikh Zakzaki. They are also holding the flag of Palestine, which shows that they are also here to show their support. These are all from the same side. These are the sides of the people that are supporting the Palestinians and their fight for freedom.
All right, thanks a lot, Gisu. Press TV's Gisu Mishamedi joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. We're now going to cross over to the occupied West Bank, where I believe demonstrations, I'm being told, that demonstrations are being held in solidarity with Palestinians. Let's look at what's going on right now.
Thank you.
We've got our correspondent Mona Candil is joining us now from Ramallah. Mona, it's great to have you with us again. Talk to us about the ensuing violence that we've been seeing, the Israeli onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza that has also commenced and increased over the night. And we were also seeing some images of solidarity demonstrations taking place for Palestinians. Talk to us about those as well, please.
Late on a Tuesday, Israeli military went crazy. Literally, they started to bombard and to destroy, to continue their airstrike everywhere in the Gaza Strip. We were receiving footage from the Gaza Strip showing as if an earthquake had hit the Palestinian areas, residential areas, people from all walks of life, children, families, complete families were killed and were under the rubble, under the destruction, and the paramedics were unable even to take their bodies to the hospitals. They literally went crazy yesterday after the Palestinian resistance group fired their missiles into the Israeli towns around the Gaza Strip in the southern borders with the Gaza Strip. Destruction, of course, was caused because of these rockets in the buildings of Sderot, of Tel Aviv, of Asqalan, and even these rockets hit Al-Quds. So after midnight, protests and demonstrations took to the streets. People just went to the streets to show their solidarity with the people of the Gaza Strip. We are speaking about brothers and sisters. They are Palestinians. They are not another country. So Palestinians in Ramallah, in Jenin, in Nablus, as well as in Al-Khalil, took part to the streets after midnight to tell the world that Palestinians are one and that they completely reject what's going on. There are calls for the Palestinian fighters here in the occupied West Bank to go to the areas where Israeli military checkpoints are there and to clash with the Israeli forces. But we have to mention something, that since day one on Saturday, and when the Palestinian resistance group started their operation and the Palestinian fighters stormed those settlements and Israeli towns, and let's say liberated these Israeli towns, immediately here in the occupied West Bank, Israeli military sent more deployments, more soldiers to all the military checkpoints. They closed all the entrances to south, the occupied West Bank. Al-Khalil had been completely closed for the fifth day. We are speaking about the fifth day. The entrances to Ariha, where the only Palestinian way out of the occupied West Bank, the Al-Karami crossing, people are allowed. Crossing was closed.
Okay, that was our correspondent Mona Candil joining us from Ramallah. Hopefully we'll be hearing from her later on in the day as well. Back to Palestinian political activist Mr. Moti Abu Mosabeh, who's on the line with us from Gaza. Mr. Mosabeh, we were seeing images of demonstrations taking place in solidarity with Gazans in the West Bank. And of course, throughout the day we've been covering various pro-Palestinian demonstrations that are taking place in cities all across the globe. How do Palestinians in Gaza feel about this level of support that they are receiving right now during these dark hours?
Yes, I've told you and I've mentioned that it's highly respected from the Palestinian people to see all this kind of support, all these demonstrations actually hitting the streets to support the Palestinian people and to denounce the ongoing Israeli aggression. It's highly respected and it really means a lot for the Palestinian people. But generally, the Palestinian people and the Gazans here in Gaza Strip understand that this is unprecedented and the Israeli occupation is going to wipe out the Gaza Strip entirely off the face of the map, as if I should say. So the situation here is unprecedented, and this should be unprecedented also regarding the international support and regarding the popular support itself. We need more than demonstrations. We need more than statements denouncing this kind of aggression. We need to find any solution. We need to find any way to put more pressure on the governments to oblige those countries and those governments to enforce the Israeli occupation to stop its aggression. And if there is a real willingness of those countries to oblige the Israeli occupation, the Israeli occupation would understand this clearly, and it would stop its ongoing and continuous aggression. I mean, till this moment, the Israeli occupation feels impunity and understands this kind of that hesitant position of the international community and of those countries as a green light to commit more and more crimes. And literally, the Israeli occupation forces race counter the clock in order to kill more Palestinians and to raise the number of the Palestinian casualties. What is going on here in Gaza should be understood and should be put in the context of the collective punishment pursued and practiced by the Israeli occupation against the Palestinian civilians here, as they are punishing the Palestinians for embracing and supporting the choice of resistance. This is the only justification for the Israeli occupation to use the white phosphorus, which is prohibited by the international laws and legislations against the Palestinian civilians in Al-Karama neighborhood. This is nothing to do with Hamas members. This is nothing to do with the military and the militant groups here in Gaza Strip to fire and to target those civilian squares and areas with the white phosphorus. This is a collective punishment to kill more and more Palestinian civilians. This is on one hand. On the other hand, I don't know what are the international community waiting for from the Israeli occupation as these airstrikes and incursions are continued on a daily basis for the fourth day in a row. The Israeli occupation has never stopped or paused those incursions against the Palestinian civilians. If we are going to, if the Israeli occupation forces are going to continue in that pattern, in that way, with targeting the Palestinian people, I think we would witness thousands of the Palestinian casualties, thousands of the Palestinian. The whole map of Gaza Strip would be different, would be changed in this regard. I mean that, yes, it's highly respected, it's highly appreciated to have or to see this kind of international support, especially on the popular level and the people level in those countries. But I mean, the only thing that we need to take into consideration as people supporting Palestine is how to pressure the governments to oblige the Israeli occupation to stop its crimes.
All right, thanks a lot. Palestinian political activist Moti Abu Musabbe joining us on the line from Gaza. I believe we have our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, joining us once again. Ashraf, every time we speak with you, of course, we need recent updates on the situation. Right now, just earlier, we were seeing live images from the Gaza skyline, more devastation and destruction being carried out by the Israeli regime. Plumes of smoke, thick plumes of smoke were billowing to the sky. What can you tell us more about the recent Israeli attacks?
Well, Bartia, this is part of the nonstop bombardment of civilian areas in the Gaza Strip, especially in Gaza City. And there is something I want to point out to is the fact that 99% of the coverage that our viewers are watching, whether from Press TV, from any other TV station, is focusing on Gaza City, because they're not covering live images from Khan Yunis, Rafah, Beit Hanun, Beit Lahia, or anywhere else, because everyone here is huddled together in one spot, all of us journalists, inside a Shifa hospital, because we believe it's the safest place, but although nowhere is safe in Gaza, as Israel continues to bomb the Gaza Strip, almost every minute there is a rocket hitting a target. There is a bomb falling on a target. I've never seen such destruction, at least in Gaza City. This is what I saw with my own eyes in Gaza City, seeing my entire neighborhood being destroyed and other neighborhoods nearby being destroyed. I've seen this before in 2014, and mainly in 2014 during the 55-day war, especially in Shija'iya and Beit Hanun. The center of Gaza City, this is like the capital of the Gaza Strip, the most prestigious neighborhood, like the area where I live. You go there, you think you are in Beit Hanun 2014 during the war, or Shija'iya neighborhood 2014 during the war. This is what the Israeli regime has done to the city that is close by or around us. We haven't seen with our own eyes what's happening in Khan Yunis, Rafah, Deir el-Balah, Al-Burej, Jabalia, and Beit Hanun. But we know there is massive destruction there as well. If you dare to ride a car, you could be hit. I mean, ambulances, I believe at least 12 ambulances were hit, and some of the paramedics were killed. So if they hit ambulances, do you think they would not hit journalists? They already killed, I believe, 7 journalists so far since Saturday. The rate, the way the Israeli killing and maiming is going, this is not a good sign of what's coming. Not a good sign, especially for the people in Gaza. Not a good sign to me, to my colleagues, and to my family, because the way this is going, I mean, I tell you, for example, today, the latest number by the Ministry of Health in Gaza regarding the deaths in Gaza has passed already 850. On Saturday, I think there were 50 when this whole thing started. So, in simple math, about I can't even do the math right now because of how much things I've seen just inside Gaza, the hospital here in Shifa Hospital. You see dead children brought in, brought by their mothers or their parents. Little babies dead, elderly people dead. They're not dying from natural causes. They're dying from falling debris, dying from rocket shrapnel. That's the kind of scene that we have to deal with in Gaza on a daily basis since Saturday. Israel and the Israeli regime, they're not fighting against militias or security forces or resistance fighters. They're fighting innocent civilians. They have nothing to do with anything that's going on. Their children, their women, they're not the elderly people. They're not carrying weapons. They're not even yielding knives, Bardia.
Right. Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent, is with us on hand from the Gaza Strip. On the right of your screen, you can see the level of devastation that these buildings and Gazans, Palestinians in Gaza, are experiencing right now. We can see a total apartment complex has been reduced to rubble. Thick plumes of smoke are billowing through the air. Ashraf, if you're still with us, here's a question we asked our analyst earlier, who also lives in Gaza. How do Gazans feel right now about the level of support that they're receiving, popular support, I mean, when we see rallies taking place in various cities in solidarity with the Palestinian cause and with Palestinians in Gaza?
Well, Bardia, I can tell you this, not this time, but in previous times, people in Gaza need real pressure on the governments of some certain regimes in the West Asia region. They need pressure from those communities, those populations there, who we know they love the Palestinian people and they support the Palestinian people. They need to exert pressure on the governments, for example, to end normalization with the Israeli regime, to condemn the killing of innocent civilians in Gaza. They need real action. They're not even asking international community to help them. They ask their own brethren to help them, not just by holding marches, to exert pressure on those governments that for decades have been normalizing relations over the table and under the table, covertly and overtly, with the Israeli regime, and encouraging the Israeli regime to kill and maim innocent Palestinians, whether in the Gaza Strip or the occupied West Bank, Al-Quds, or even inside occupied Palestine 1948. They are happy about the protests. But one thing we have to understand, it's nearly impossible for people in Gaza to even watch the news. They don't have electricity. They hardly have access to internet. There's almost no internet all over the Gaza Strip. So even with the protests are taking places, the only way people can know in Gaza that someone is expressing solidarity with them is every once in a while when they have access to social media or whenever they get some kind of electricity to watch television.
Thank you, Ashraf Press TV's Asher Shannon joining us from Gaza, giving us an on-hand update of the scope of death and destruction that the Palestinians are experiencing at the hands of the Israeli regime and its aerial assaults. Also joining us now from Osaka, we have geopolitical analyst Ryan Dawson. Mr. Dawson, welcome to the program. What do you see right now when we're looking at the Gaza skyline right now, the residential complexes, these houses being reduced to rubble as a result of the asymmetrical war being carried out by the Israelis? And of course, this isn't the first time.
Unfortunately, this is a cyclical event. You know, you had cast lead, there was Pillar of God, you have iron swords, or whatever they're calling it this time. And they routinely attack residential centers, apartment complexes, they bomb Gaza University, they bomb agricultural centers. And then in addition to all the bombings, they cut off the electricity, which is mostly needed for sewage treatment and refrigeration, and as well as access to any food imports and water supply, so, which are all war crimes. And they justify this all by war propaganda. There's a story floating around about 60 or 40 beheaded babies. It was nonsense. It wasn't true, but it went all over the place. And there are people so angry at some of the images and things from Hasbara that they're calling for genocide. Even if Hamas was guilty of the things that they were accused of, that doesn't mean you can collectively punish the Gaza Strip and just start bombing houses. But Israel does this. And I would point out that the Israelis murdered 189 people just in the West Bank during quote-unquote peacetime between January and September. All civilians. And you'll have people saying, well, I condemn the killing of civilians on both sides. And that's actually light years ahead of how it used to be, because before Elon Musk had Twitter, you couldn't show both sides. More or less, it was in the crevices of the internet, because you get banned on YouTube, you'll get banned on Facebook if you take an even-handed approach at this crisis. And they always ignore the whole context of the annexation of land and occupation and start the story in the middle saying, well, Hamas surprise attacked for no reason. I would like to know what the reason was for hundreds of rabbis to go into the Al-Aqsa Mosque holy site and try to do Talmudic rituals in a mosque. What possible positive reaction did they expect from doing that? And this isn't two or three people. Hundreds of rabbis, all adults, decided it would be a good idea to go into a holy site in East Jerusalem, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, at which they're not supposed to be in, and raid it. And then they were spitting on Christians and the normal things they kind of do. Why are they allowed to abuse people? The settlers routinely, they chop down olive trees, they burn farms. Sometimes they set people's houses on fire. Sometimes they just move into someone else's house and kick them out, say, God gave it to me. This is my living room now. How do you expect people to respond from that? This was a prison outbreak. They broke out of their cage. But at some point, it's predictable And of course, it is wrong if Hamas is killing civilians or settlers, even though settlers are thieves. And they're also fighting the military. But if you look at the ratio, in all of these conflicts, the Palestinians have always killed more soldiers than civilians. And the Israelis have always killed more civilians than soldiers, tenfold most of the time. And they're not even trying. They say they knock. They do not. You can't just bomb apartments. You can't just randomly shoot rockets in the vicinity of a place either. But it's at this point, because they are murdering Palestinian civilians all year long anyway, and there's no media or coverage until 3 days ago when Hamas fires back. So all this abuse and death is being suffered in silence with not a peep in the Western media. It's only when Israelis get killed that suddenly people notice, and that's why they do it.
You mentioned the mainstream media, Mr. Dawson. Give us your perspective on how the mainstream media is covering issues when it comes to the issue with regards to events that take place in Palestine, in occupied Palestine. Israelis seem to be playing the victim card here at this point. Give us your assessment of that.
Yeah, and some of them are victims, but it's very lopsided. But usually the mainstream media doesn't even cover when a Palestinian gets killed at a checkpoint, or the fact of why there's even a checkpoint in the first place, or color-coded license plates, segregated schools, different laws for Jews and everyone else. The apartheid regime, the racism, like all that, they don't report on it. They only report when something bad happens to an Israeli, and they always start the story in the middle and act like it just happened out of the blue and it's anti-Semitism or something. This is not about ethnicity or anything. This is about a country that is colonizing their neighbors. You cannot simultaneously colonize the West Bank or blockade Gaza and then pretend like you're aiming towards peace. They are not. Netanyahu went to the UN recently with a map of Israel that he held up. Palestine wasn't on it. That's a provocation. They were looking for a pretext so that they could flatten Gaza, mowing the lawn, as they say, or their foreign minister who called them human animals. A lot of genocidal statements come out of the Knesset all the time. The Western media doesn't report it. They've never reported on any of the airstrikes Israel's done on Syria all year long and last year and the year before that. They don't talk about it. But if anything, if Syria did that back, or if any of these atrocities happened to Israelis, it would be on the news all day, every day. It's all they're going to talk about. You watch in the coming Republican debate, they're not going to talk about Ukraine anymore. It's going to be all Gaza, and it's going to be all pro-Zionist. That's how the media is. And why is it that way? Because there is a massive Zionist lobby and virtually no Palestinian lobby. And they just go where the money is.
Mr. Dawson, let's also focus on the reactions to the past few days. There's the reactions from international bodies like the United Nations, or basically inaction of those international bodies. There's the reactions that we've seen from various governments, the United States, European countries, allies to the West have not surprisingly given their all-out support to the Israelis. And then there's also popular opinion and the solidarity rallies that we've been seeing in various cities across the globe. Break down these three levels of reactions for us.
Sure. So on the televised media government level, it breaks down along the same lines it always does. You see the entire West, everybody that had the propaganda about Ukraine and Iraq and Syria and Libya and other places they invaded over nothing, they're all pro-Israel. Most of the Middle East, and including Turkey now too, and Russia and some others are giving at least moral support to the Palestinians, a little bit more from Lebanon, at least from Hezbollah. Egypt is in line, but there's a lot more support. Even the West Bank, they put on at least a strike. They're not buying Israeli goods. There's not much else they can do other than violence. I mean, they're going to strike. They're going to boycott. Even the UN, however, they do try to pass resolutions condemning what Israel does, the settlements, for example, and house demolitions, and it always gets vetoed in the Security Council by the United States. But there have been times where it has gotten through and a resolution passed, and it doesn't matter because okay, it's just a bunch of finger waving because there's never any consequences when Israel just ignores it and does it anyway. There's no economic sanctions. There's no punishments whatsoever. They don't even have dialogue about it. They just make a resolution. Israel says, whatever, we're going to just build more settlements and smash more houses. We don't care what the UN says. And that's because the UN really is just camouflage for the United States to selectively enforce the resolutions that it wants. So the UN Resolution 1441 stipulating Iraq can't have WMDs, well, they'll use that as a pretext to invade, even though it turned out they didn't have WMDs and there never was evidence that they did. But they passed a resolution about it, accused them of doing it. They weren't guilty of that. They got invaded anyway, hundreds and thousands murdered. It's just camouflage for the U.S. So until the U.S. gets in line, none of these things are enforceable. But it is very telling that even in the United States, with 100% of the media on Israel's side, you're still seeing protests in all the major cities in favor of Palestine.
Mr. Dawson, the Russian President Vladimir Putin has just recently made a statement regarding the events. He says, in his words, blamed the failed U.S. policy for the recent escalation in the West Asia region. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, yes, because the United States is not even-handed. They give Israel billions of dollars a year. Usually they're the number one foreign aid recipient, with the exception of Ukraine the last couple of years, is Israel. Or they're... And a lot of prominent Jewish intellectuals and things within the U.S. will condemn house demolitions and the things that are being done in the West Bank. They will putting God by it. Nothing's really done about it. And they continue to give Israel billions of dollars. So because there are no consequences for their actions, they're not going to change their – there's no moral gumption. There's no – guilt about what they're doing, because a lot of these people think, as crazy as it sounds, that God gave them the land and they can do whatever they want because they're supposed to be there because they are returned after 2,000 years. Some silly story that allows them to just confiscate land for people living there and give it to themselves. Until there are consequences, they will not change.
All right, thanks a lot. Geopolitical analyst Ryan Dawson joining us from Osaka. Israelis continue to bombard Gaza with air and artillery strikes. We are going to keep a close eye on all the latest developments with regards to the deadly escalation and deadly raids that are being carried out by the Israelis against the Palestinians in Gaza right here on Press TV. We're going to return on the top of the hour with our news in brief. And it's goodbye for now. Thanks for watching, everybody.